Testing, testing. September 18th, 1979, talking to Simeon Mountain in the Lotto. We're talking about him starting a taxi business.
So now we charge $2 to go per person to go up to here with a $4 minimum. We don't make too much. Little we make helps. Bill that really hurts is insurance. I carry $300,000 by built insurance, 4 passengers. So that cost me $1,200 a year. And so it's about break even. I make a little money on it, but the part that hurts me is the insurance. $1,200 a year.
Before you started the cab service, people would ask you for a ride to go up there?
Maybe people would talk about it. Maybe they expect free ride. And when we first started cab service, people were kind of, you know, reluctant to pay at the start. And you tell them $1. Yeah, I started off with $1.50. You tell them $1.50 each. And, they weren't used to it, you know. They'll find it, they get used to it. And now they're happy to pay, you know. They don't mind. It's just like going into a store. You get a loaf of bread, you have to pay for it. And before last year, I used to break down a lot with the old trucks. And people used to get disappointed on kind of the truck. Not at me, but at them, you know. Because they know they would have hard time getting right from other people, you know. Because they're not around. Most were around most of the time.
Did they expect rides for Green?
We told them that Green Air Service doesn't provide taxi service for the passenger. No more than Helter. You gotta provide your own transportation. People never give me any kind of trouble. A lot of times people go to Galena and tell me they'll pay me on the way back because maybe they have a $500 check, maybe a $1,000 check. Tell them, okay. So, coming back. About 2.5 miles. Which, I'll get off the subject for a little while. Which reminds me that before I became the postmaster, I used to haul mail by a wheelbarrow all the way up the hill toward the graveyard and up on the ridge. We didn't have this road straight up the hill in those days, so we had to climb up this, going to the cemetery with a wheelbarrow, and on a day like this it used to be really hard pushing that wheelbarrow, and you have no traction under your feet, you know, you'd slide back down. And we had no communication those days, no radios. You didn't know when, I forgot who was there, Jim Dodson. You didn't know when he would come in. The schedule was about 10 o'clock in the morning. Sometimes you would go up the hill, stay up there all day long, come back down around 7, 8 o'clock at night. And just when you're around the bridge, here comes the plane. so you have to walk back up the hill, pushing the wheelbarrow. Mosquitoes eating your arms, your neck, all over. Not eating all day. It's a good pay though, $10 a load, $10 a wheelbarrow load. Sometimes we used to make 5-6 trips, which was $50-$60 a day. And in the springtime, sometimes we had no mail for about 3 weeks. Because the runway was all dirt, no, it wasn't gravel. So it take time for the ground to dry up. So the mail would pile up. And my Uncle Dan and I used to have to haul the mail with dogs. We had a two-wheel cart pulling. To have to run back and forth. The catalogs was the one that used to make me cry. Sears Roebuck and Montgomery Ward catalogs. You know how thick they are? Sometimes about 6 or 7 bags, 8 bags would come. And you could haul maybe only about 3 on a wheelbarrow. And they're heavy. It used to make me sweat. Now you go in the truck, turn the key, and you're up the hill in no time. So that's one of the things I used to do. Hey, we were talking about cat service. And I changed the subject. I think that was all about cat service. Now that we have a clinic a couple of miles out of town, people come around once in a while when they can. If they don't have a truck or anything like that, they come and ask me to bring them back. And we charge $4. With no waiting time. I tell them I can't wait. If I wait, it'll be $20 an hour. Man works for 15. The truck is can do much more than a man. So I think the going rate is $25 an hour, but I charge 20. And we don't have very much waiting time, you know, because they're in that much business. So people would tell me to pick them up in a half hour or an hour. Like I did this afternoon, I brought some people back, and while you were waiting, I had to go back and pick them up again. So I think there'll be more business too when the when most of the people move back to the new town site. But I don't know if I want to be involved in taxi, provide taxi service back there. Because there just isn't that much money. One of the reasons is there's no place to build in town, as you can see the houses are really close together. And the main reason is some kind of flood. Every time we get a big flood, everybody wants to move. Then you forget about it. But I think, as it's going to turn out, almost everyone in town is going to have 2 houses, you know, 2 or 3 houses, or 4. And we'll end up with 4 family, probably. We have 3 in town. I rent one to my brother and my oldest daughter is living in our old building. And we have logs, 100 logs for another building on the new town site. And we have a lot back there. And we applied for hut housing, which I'm changing my mind to purchase soon. Because I don't like to be in a hole. We're going to be in a hole for 30 years, they say. At maximum of $300 a month, and I would probably have to pay the maximum. The minimum was $30. I guess according to your earnings, and the government would pay the rest. But that was The main reason people wanted to move was expansion and flooding. Besides that, I'm involved in the National Guard. I'm very active in the National Guard. I'm one of the four first sergeants. We used to have six, but then we divided the we made two battalions out of one battalion. And right now, they're talking about making another battalion in the interior, or having a big recruiting drive in next month, in October. And I'm supposed to be going to Ruby, Galena, Kirkuk, Huslia, Alakakit, Hughes and Battles to try to recruit more people, men and women, into the National Guard. And if we do get a battalion, I will probably become sergeant major. You have only one sergeant major in a battalion. And as it stands now, I saw my record last spring. I was reviewing it. They brought it here and they want me to check it. And on the recommendations, they see a note down there signed by the battalion commander that Simeon would be very hard to beat for the next sergeant major. And, it's a coveted position, all right, but I don't think I want to fill that post as a sergeant major. So right now we just signed up people from Galena, but for the last 3 or 4 years we're Company D, which comprises people from Huslia, Nalada, and Kaltai, with Nalada being headquarters company. Nalada being the headquarters of the company. And I'm the first sergeant, and we have an operation sergeant, a commo sergeant, and a clerk, all supplied by Nalada. And Nalada have been winning all the honors all the time from the other companies. We've got flags in the armory, winning first place for everything last year. First time they gave awards. And this year they gave another award, but we lost. We came in second, but it was very close between B Company and D Company. And I think the battalion commander gave it to B Company because D always won it, in order to treat people equal, I guess, or not to have too much friction between the companies. I think he gave it to B Company.
Are many of the young men joining the National Guard?
Mm-hmm. We jumped from, in the ladder, we jumped from 9 to 25 in 1 year. All of a sudden, everybody wanted to join, so we have a pretty big unit.
Why do they
want to
join?
Just because they saw their buddy joining, I guess.
What kind of benefits do they have for joining?
Well, the benefits come later, after you retire. Of course, you have benefits right now. When we go to Camp Carroll, which is out of Fort Rich, we have commissary privileges for one thing, which is very good. Things are much cheaper. We can go and buy groceries. And most of us with large families always buy a lot of groceries and ship it home. And two, even now, we can go to the Galena PX and buy stuff in the PX. All we have to show is our jump pay, our monthly jump pay form and an ID, which we all have. You can go to Glen any time and buy things, maybe a little over half price. And we can jump on National Guard aircraft any place between the villages so long as the aircrafts are going around there. Also, we carry a $20,000 life insurance 24 hours a day, which we started having only about 2 or 3 years ago. And we've lost a couple of people in town since that time. And, their parents got $20,000. After you retire, which is after you put in 20 years, you have more benefits. You can go any place around the world on a military aircraft, space available basis, you and your immediate family. You can go to any hospital, Armed Forces Hospital, see a dentist. You get a permanent commissary card and a PX card. And we can borrow money up to 80,000 right now, I think, to build a house. Maybe up to 120,000 to start a business. And other benefits. Our pay, the lowest pay is about $13.50 a drill or something like that. Then it goes up according to your rank and time and grade. You get the most pay in town, you get $41 a drill. So we're going to be having our weekend drills pretty soon. Weekend drills, we put in 5. So for a weekend drill, I would get 5 times 40, 200.
What do you do on a drill?
Okay, we cover different subjects. Both map reading, first aid, patrolling, land navigation, weapons. We fire our weapons. Almost every year we have weapons qualification. We see training films. And we have a, from last year we have a new machine. I forgot what they call it. Something like Bestelsa. It has a something like it shows pictures and it has a tape and they work together and it's very interesting. Make it much easier to learn and much easier on the instructor. Most of the time they end up giving the instructions which they don't want me to do, giving classes, because first sergeant is not supposed to be doing things like that. Must be the other people. But the others are just as busy as I am. And it's hard time to get them to study. You know, before you give instructions or before you give the class, you have to study the subject, you know, you have to be familiar with it. Next weekend, Robert is the NCOIC. I was the NCOIC here for the last 16 years. And even though I was the first sergeant too, I was holding 2 jobs, just like they finally told me to give the job to Robert so I don't have to be first sergeant and NCOIC at the same time. And Robert wasn't very much a responsible person. But after we gave him the job, we really change. We really take care of our armory, and Well, everything in it, you know, and the paperwork. So, since the last 2 years, just like I'm riding along free, you know, he takes care of everything. Where a few years ago, I thought he, you know, he couldn't do it. But after we gave him the responsibility, he started carrying it out. So that's really good.
People talk about the military, or, you know, we're talking about military things. Years ago, there used to be, there wasn't an army, there still were, people had battles and things like that, and there was some kinds of fighting going on around in this area, like, say, 100 years ago. What was that, and how did that happen? I mean, what sort of things went on?
I remember one of the stories about the last time, I believe it was the last time the Kaikuk people came down, either the Kaikuk people or the Kaikuk River people came down to fight with us. We hear a lot of stories about it. We didn't know they were going to come, you know, they were coming. But there was a medicine man in Kaikuk, and he knew there was something was going to happen. I believe it was his son or his son-in-law was coming down to Nulato. And Nulato was down here about half a mile at that time. And the name of the place is Kazam. We still call it Kazam right now. The village used to be there. And this man, I think he was a middle-aged man, the way they describe him, was coming down. I don't know the reason. Anyway, he was coming down from Kaiu, and his father or father-in-law knew it was, you know, I guess he had the feeling there was something going to happen. So he gave his underwear to his son to use. So, he put it on and he came down. And I guess he was sleeping in a smokehouse down here. He started hearing noises. Then he realized that there were people came, you know, to fight with a lot of people. Kill them all, to burn them out. So he was inside the smokehouse, and they were hitting these buildings underground. I've had a hard time to name it. Anyway, the underground houses, they were blocking them, throwing grass inside and blocking them with sleds and everything, and lighting them. So he starts going around this smokehouse. I guess the logs were upright like this. So he starts going around feeling the logs. He finally came to one log that was kind of loose, something like that, easy. Pulled it apart and he squeezed through there. And I guess they had all the snowshoes on one cache, you know, all usually caches and something. So he started going back to, sneaking back to these caches. Start sneaking back there like a dog so they wouldn't recognize him. He was crawling. Then he went up to the cache and he reached up. He grabbed a pair of snowshoes. He didn't know it was one side was man's snowshoes and another side was a woman's snowshoes. And he took it and I guess he crawled into the woods. And he started walking back here somewhere. There's a lake behind the Zalma. He got in the trail and he started running back, I guess. Which when he saw all these men standing on both sides of the trail. You watch them a long time. They never move. So he realized that it was just parkas. They did that so nobody will escape. Just put parkas on both sides of the trail. He just ran down. Then he came out on around 2 miles. And he started running across. And they said it was dark in the winter. He started running across. But halfway across the river, they saw him. Because they said the light was so bright, you can see way on the other side of the river. The light was so bright from the underground houses burning. So he heard them saying, one is getting away. So they sent the two, I believe it was two best runners after him. And just when he was reaching on the other side of the river, they were getting pretty close to him. And in those days, they said, before they come into town, they always left their bows and arrows out of town. I guess most of the time on the other side of the river. So he was going to fool them. And he ran up the bank and he made a big circle. He got his bow and arrow and he was ready for them coming up the bank. They were quite a ways out from the bank and he heard them talking together. And they said, we don't know what he's going to do after he gets back up there. Let's go back and we'll just tell the chief that we killed him. We caught him up and killed him. The chief, or we'll just tell the people. And they agreed among each other that they would turn back. He was ready for them, waiting. But they turned around and they came back across. And I guess this guy told the people that they killed him. And no one escaped except him. He made it back up to Kaya the next day. He told the people up there and they got ready. They got ready for Second War. The women were all making sinews, the men were making bows and arrows, and they made something like a fort, you know. They waited and waited. But, nobody came. So only one guy escaped from the battle. Another time too, I think it was a different time, they came down, like people, and I think they picked only on the medicine man. They beat him up and beat him up and beat him up with a big club, I guess, big branch or a tree. Keep hitting him. And they said, I don't know how long they hit him, and the tree keep glancing off him. It's like hitting iron. I don't know how long. Finally, he started getting soft. After I don't know how long, they finally killed him. Only him. They didn't touch anybody else. Then they all left, going back to the upriver, I don't know where. And not one of them made it back to Kaikuk. They all froze. I guess the medicine man made such a strong medicine that not one of them made it back to Kaikuk. All froze to death. And another one, we paid them back. One time, we went up and did the same thing. I don't know where the town was, someplace up Kaikuk River. But a lot of people did the same thing. They blocked up all their houses. Nobody could escape. And there was one person there from Nalada. He was married, one man. You told him to come out. We want only you. He said, no, I wouldn't come out without my wife. They keep telling him, no, we don't want your wife. We want only you. No, he wouldn't go out. He said, go ahead. Burn us. Burn all of us. I'll go with my wife too. Finally, they told him, okay, take your wife out. He came out with his wife and burnt the whole town. I hear stories about a long time ago. men never used to go out when they hear noises, you know, dogs barking or anything like that. Only the young girls or women used to go out and check what the dogs are barking for. I guess they were scared of war, you know, and the enemy. It would be hard for them to kill a woman, I guess. So, only girls and women used to go out after dark to check different kind of noises.
Did you hear any reasons why they
would
have
girls? No. Just for the satisfaction of killing people, I guess. We hear the story too, about my grandpa, Little Sam. I don't know if you heard about him. He's from Huslia. You met him. He died not too long ago. He wanted to make war about 10 years ago, 10, 12 years ago. We heard, maybe it's just a story. He wanted to make war against a lot of people for Caillou. And there was only one guy that was going to be saved. He was going to take only Simeon and nobody else. They would kill everybody else. Maybe because I was born in Dalby. And do you know Edwin Simon? He died too, you know. He was very active in everything. He used to always tell me that I belong to Kai. And he used to embarrass me in front of people, you know. Not people from this town. People from other villages, maybe, or other cities. And if I was with him, he would introduce me. As from Kaikuk River. And he used to tell them. That's the reason why we're trying to get him back. Only smart people come out of Kaikuk River, he tell them.
You mentioned that there was this, that time that they came down for that medicine man. Mm-hmm. And there used to be a lot of strong medicine around here. And I wonder, we heard from other places that we talked that sometimes the missionaries who came didn't appreciate that much or maybe didn't get along with it or whatever. How is that here?
Well, there wasn't very many or hardly any medicine people, you know, since I start remembering. It was just before our days. But I think, or I heard that the missionaries, when they came, were against them, you know, told them not to practice. But since I start remembering, we had only one old woman. That was a medicine woman. Just this person's mother, this person that just died. And I hear that his father was was a pretty big medicine man. Mm. I remember once I was hurt inside. I don't know how. I think it was my aunt told her about it. So she come, even though I didn't want to. I'm kind of my religion, I guess. She came by one evening and she spit in her hand, you know, and rub it in my chest, under my clothes. Rub it like that. For a couple of days, I think. And then it went away. I bought it no more. People used to say my grandpa was a little bit medicine man too, but I never saw him making medicine. Josephine remembers a person making medicine when she was 3 years old. She thought she dreamt, so she was telling her mom after a few years. Her mom told her that this person was making medicine and you were only 3 years old. So she has much better memory than I have.
What happened to all the nursing people?
It's died off and nobody replaced them, I guess. I hear people talking about it sometimes. I hear them saying, well, maybe God allowed it because there was no doctors in those days. And as the doctors and nurses, there start being more doctors and more nurses. It just gradually died off. I mean, the people that were medicine men didn't pass it on, I guess. I used to hear stories saying that when they first start becoming medicine men, they each like get fit. They get off their mind. Then they come to in a fire or something like that. Just wake up in the middle of a fire, being in the fire. They just walk out of it. And they're okay after that. They used to do that so many times before they became a medicine man or medicine woman. I don't know if there was. I think the men were much stronger, do I hear stories, you know, concerning medicine. You always hear about big medicine men, but you never hear about big medicine women, you know.
You never hear things about younger people who maybe the old medicine men or medicine women are trying to come to them, but they just trying to take them.
I was afraid my cousin Elmer Minook, he lives in Anchorage. It's like my brother too. We're always together. We used to get like that. We remember in our teenage days, he just used to disappear. I think even while he's standing among us. And we used to go searching for him. And we'd find him different places, like in the cache or under in another house under somebody's bed or something like that, just sleeping. And we just wake him up and he would know what happened. He used to tell me about it, you know, that maybe he might become a medicine man And he prayed a lot, you see, so he wouldn't become a medicine man. But after he got older, he got out of it, never bothered him. I remember that so well. For a while I thought he was going to become a medicine man too. Okay.
Why would people not want to become medicine?
For one thing, my belief would be if I became a medicine man after I died, I think I would go below, you know, because medicine people, they claim, used to do a lot of wicked things. They used to eat people, you know, not actually eat them, but people used to see each other, see a medicine man, and telling him, well, that guy over there, I don't like him. Here's a piece of meat, here's $20, here's a fox skin, or something like that, you know. Do something about it. And the person would, you know, pass away in a short time after. And a lot of times they say, if you do that, it turns back on you. Either on you or your religious family. If you want to see a medicine man and wish someone bad luck, later on it would turn back on you. I heard a story about another medicine man that used to make wine out of just water. He used to get a dishpan of water and put it so high and make all kinds of motions and singing and all that. And they see him putting water in there and nobody else bothered. He used to put it back down and it's red. They drink it and wine. But then they said